I'm Martin Tyler. You are listening to Dan and Pals on Leeds Student Radio, and it's live!
That's right, we are live, I do believe. Good morning, everybody. Today is Thursday, February the 12th?
11th? Yeah, 12th. 12th. 2 days before Valentine's.
Yeah. Oh, you romantic, Mick. Yeah. I'd just like to welcome everyone back to Series 2 of Dan and Pals. I'm Dan, and in the studio today, we've got three splendid guests. Mr. Nick Simpson, how's it going?
How are you doing, Dan?
I'm very well. I'm very, very, very well.
Thanks for having me again.
Yeah, no worries. And Vic, how's it
going?
Morning,
I'm good, thanks.
Welcome back. How was your Christmas?
Thanks. It was alright. I broke my collarbone, didn't do much.
Festive. So
it was all right. Yeah, festive.
And we've got a brand new guest in the show, all the way from London.
Yeah.
It's Archie. How's it going?
Yeah, really good, really good.
Welcome on the show. So we've got like a short-ish show today. We've been cut down by half an hour just because of the sheer popularity of this radio station. So huzzah for that. We're just gonna get straight into it, right? I was watching PMQs yesterday, and the thought occurred to me that is this politics? Punch and Judy, shallowness. It's your fault. Oh no, you can't even talk about the economy. Well, you're just a rotten egg, and it's just like having a go. Now, I was thinking, what do we think about this? Because on one side, it's like, yeah, is that fake shallowness crap? But on the other side, this is what gets people liking politics. You know, this is what people enjoy. Yeah, I was just wondering what your guys' opinions were.
I remember listening to Gary Gibbon, who's political editor of Channel 4, and he said that in PMQs you often saw particularly the Tory male MPs cupping their hands as breasts whenever like a female MPs talks. I mean, the level of kind of infantile behaviour in the House of Commons is ridiculous. Personally, I think it's completely outdated. The public don't like it, and it adds to the perception that that it's kind of this distant, elitist group of people, kind of all public school within Westminster. So I think kind of like the sooner it can be changed, the better.
I mean, you can imagine this going on in the dinner hall of Eton with John Bercow chairing it all back in his youthful days.
I mean, that's what it is, though, because it kind of is that anyway.
Yeah.
It is kind of boys from kind of, it's very male, like predominantly male, predominantly boarding school, kind of public school. So in that way, it's kind of no surprise that they act the way they do.
Yeah, and it's also a byproduct of a two-party system where the entire means of achieving an election victory comes from basically just taking the piss out of your opposite number. And when that's the emphasis and that's the main way to achieve success, it's not surprising that it's just catcalling basically that dominates House of Commons.
It does all seem pretty immature. I remember on yesterday's magical episode of Prime Minister's Questions, so Miliband had a go at Cameron about dodgy tax donors to the Conservatives. Cameron shot back with, "Well, you can't even talk about the economy. Look what we inherited from you." You know, the standard thing that comes out of all Conservative mouths. And then Miliband just went back to the dodgy taxes and sort of finished it off by saying, "There's something rotten at the core of your party, and it's you." And everyone was like, waving the flags in the air. Like, honestly, I can't believe these people running our country.
I think that's what it is. I think everyone knows in the run-up to the general election, the Conservatives are going to talk about the economy, Labour are talking about the NHS, and they're kind of all ignoring every other issue. And I think that's one of the reasons for why there's massive kind of political disengagement, because no one's talking about the issues they're really concerned about. For example, I actually put... I was at the independent debate last night about... And Hillary Benn...
This was a voting debate for the youth. What was it?
It was about should young people bother to vote in the May general election?
Okay.
And one of the questions I put to Hillary Benn, who was one of the candidates there, he put forward this really strong argument for staying in the EU. And I said, that's all well and good, but you haven't seen that argument from Ed Miliband. And I think that ties in with what you're saying about kind of, you know, politicians are just talking about the select few things. It's all about kind of vote catching, because Ed Miliband knows that if people start talking about the EU, it's not a strong issue for Labour. Mm. So, you know, it's kind of a bit of a hot political topic.
Yeah. Which is the opposite of UKIP, who are conducting a campaign specifically on EU policy and refusing to address any domestic issues. That's how election campaigns are fought.
There's only so many things you can focus on as well.
Yeah.
And you've got to catch people's attention, really, with them. And the EU is a big talking point at the moment, isn't it?
100%. I mean, Nigel Farage and his Merry Men, they get a lot of, not slack, what's the word?
Flack,
thank you. Mm. but, to be honest, EU is a massive issue, right? There isn't a democracy in Europe. It's not a democracy, is it? You know, there's people running it that aren't elected. People are disillusioned with it. So even though they sometimes go about their point in some sort of sticky ways, let's say, you know, a bit spicy, and hurt maybe like not the most like PC, I say in quotation marks, I think the EU is a big issue, and you know, the situation of democracy in Europe is massive.
Well, UKIP have done well in remaining relatively PC in comparison to what some people would call anti EU parties that preceded them in the UK, in particular the BNP. UKIP have done very well in packaging themselves in a way that isn't easily branded as racist or discriminatory, and that's part of the reason.
They get those labels. They know that you hear people talking about people that support UKIP, and it's like, what are you doing? They're a racist party. They don't like immigrants. So I think they have maybe packaged it well, but to their core, there's still some uneasiness. Maybe
at the debate last night, there was a live Twitter feed behind the panelists, and people could kind of tweet in, and they'd be shown on this huge projector. But one interesting tweet that I thought was quite kind of thought-provoking was someone said, is the EU like kind of a too complicated a kind of an institution for there to be a referendum on? Kind of do people fully understand it? Yeah. And is that kind of, on the one hand, really patronising? Surely we do understand. But on the other hand, it is really a complex issue, particularly the for argument to stay in Europe, and it often kind of requires really complicated economic arguments that I don't think everyone fully understands.
No, I agree. I don't think people understand the economic arguments behind staying or leaving the EU, and then the misperception is that you get these like racist arguments behind leaving the EU, whereas really, those are two completely separate things.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think, like, if you look at Nigel Farage and the arguments it makes, it's very emotional. And I think if you look at kind of UKIP voters, a lot of it's kind of this emotional kind of, you know, we need to take back what's ours and kind of the sovereignty. Yeah. And it's not. And I think sometimes it lacks that kind of clear-headed debate.
Yeah, the real good reasons for leaving the EU have nothing to do with immigration or independence. It's a matter of democracy and economy.
But let's go back a couple steps, because we mentioned the economy, and you know, we mentioned how people don't understand the economy and don't understand what's going on. You know, I'm in my third year of doing economics now, and I can tell you anyone can do it, right? It's the most accessible thing that I believe everyone should be part of. Everyone, because it obviously affects everyone, you know, rightly or wrongly so. As Clinton said, it's the economy, stupid. I don't completely agree with that, but it is pretty important, and it's common sense. It's 95% of it's common sense. It's not just a bunch of maths and stats. You know, that's why I apparently there's a society starting in Leeds University called the Leeds
Self-Promotion.
I'm not self. This is on behalf of one of my good friends, Luke. If you're listening, Luke, he's starting a society with a couple of his friends called the Leeds Society for Economic Pluralism, and they're helping making economics accessible and education reform and political action. So yeah, Leeds Society for Economic Pluralism.
Yeah, I think that really ties in with this whole idea of when you speak to friends. I study politics, and they say, oh, kind of politics, I've got no idea. But you kind of get them talking about one subject. I don't know, you know, it could be like benefits, the NHS, and they'll say, oh, I really care about the NHS. Well, you're interested in politics.
Exactly.
And I think there's a growing... I think that's what politicians or politics needs to do today to kind of really engage the youth, which is kind of close that distance between what people perceive of politics. And tying back with the PMQs thing, that's another thing that adds to this whole perception that, you know, oh, politics, you know, it's got no relevance to my life. And I think if we started with the changing of the PMQ...
That's something that Farage has done quite well. He's had a stab repeatedly at this idea of the professional politician that dominates Westminster. And that's an interesting step as well if UKIP were to win an election theoretically, then what kind of political class does Farage envision himself as being the leader of? You know, what's the alternative to the Westminster, you know, Tory toff?
I mean, he was part of the city, Farage, wasn't he? Like, let's not think that this is, you know, a guy that used to work in the coal mines.
Yeah.
he had his own business. Yeah. You know, he was a bit of a big don back in the day.
Yeah.
But it is interesting how he is his I don't want to say target market. His like prime person to vote for his party is someone that maybe would have voted for Labour, like maybe, and yeah, it's ironic because he's almost as establishment as you could get in a way.
Well, I think some people say it's basically the kind of the change in the 1970s, and it's this whole group of particularly white working class, kind of older with kind of less education, who felt left behind, and I think that's where the core electorate is. But then again, I think Rochester and Strood proved that wrong. Clacton's a particular example. If you look at where you could do well, it normally fits those criteria. But Rochester and Strood is slightly different in the sense that it's not necessary. It's a bit of a younger, kind of more educated, mixed kind of constituency. Mm. So that's a big question for UKIP. Kind of, can they translate that support into kind of a broader electoral base that he thinks he can?
Mm. And can they stay relevant beyond one election? Because historically, any challenger to the two-party system, whether it's the Lib Dems or going even further back, has stung the two parties, but then quickly receded. And it is very difficult to break that monopoly that the two main parties have.
That's a good point, because I was going to ask. That's a good segue. Do we live in a democracy? Do we live in a democracy? If we can only choose really from two parties, I mean, yes, we've got UKIP and we've got the Green Party and whatever. They don't even have enough candidates to form a majority in Parliament. So realistically, the ruling party is going to be making legislation, making policy. It's going to be the Conservatives or Labour. Maybe Liberal Democrats might be able to latch onto the back of one of those two. But if we do only have a two-party system and our views aren't represented, what are we meant to do?
I think what the brilliance of the likes of the Green Party can do is that, although if you look at their policies and you're like, okay, this doesn't make sense, it doesn't add up, what they can do is they can kind of shape the debate within England, and that can kind of alter the policies of the main two parties.
Yeah.
So although they came out, I think, what was it I heard last night about Natalie Green saying everyone should get £71 a week.
Yeah, yeah.
Which to me sounds ridiculous, but...
It sounds great. No, I mean, I'd love something.
Is that a green scheme?
Yeah. Yeah, green is in cash.
Anyway, are they doing to stop economic growth or something?
Yeah, yeah.
You know what?
That's not such a bad idea.
That's interesting because...
But it's innovative ideas. I mean, it's a ridiculous idea that would never work. Personally,
what, economic growth?
I mean, stopping economic growth.
Yeah, economic growth is an increase in income for the country, right? If we take away the assumption that an increase in income increases happiness, right? If you take away that assumption, so let's say you're earning 40k a year, 50k a year. As soon as you start earning that amount of money, the more money you earn, your happiness doesn't actually increase. So if you take away that assumption, then growth, what's the point of it? Because it's not going to increase the maximum utility.
I think the point is that economic growth doesn't benefit everyone, you know. It benefits the higher segments of society. But what England needs now isn't growth necessarily, it's distribution of income that already exists. Income does lead to happiness. But
see, I don't know.
If
you're on a low income.
Only up to 11, it plateaus at some point, man.
Yeah, but there's a lot of people who would still benefit greatly in this country from additional income.
That is true.
A disparity in wealth, if anything, accentuates civil unrest and makes people less happy.
Exactly.
The more evident the divide is.
And there's a lot of evidence showing that economic growth leads to higher inequality.
Invariably. Yeah.
Well, on that happy note, we're going to have a quick song, but we'll be back after this. You'll listen to Dan Pals. You had all my day, you had it all. You had it all my day. Each morning.
are listening to Dan and Pals on Leeds Student Radio, and it's live!
Thank you, Martin, for bringing us back into the show. You are listening to Dan and Pals, we are live, it's 11:49, so we've really only got about 7 minutes left. But we're going to carry on talking about voting and young people. Are young people disillusioned with politics? Have they always been disillusioned with politics? Is this a new phenomenon? How can we get people more involved? Do people like Russell Brand get people more involved in politics without actually wanting to become involved in politics themselves? Sweet, sweet irony. Yeah, tell me about this debate you went to last night, because that was all about that, wasn't it?
Yeah, so...
Archie.
So I think, I don't even think one panellist was arguing against it. I think every panellist said, look, if you want to change the political system, you've got
who were the panellists?
The panellists were Hilary Benn.
Okay, Sam, local MP, yeah, Hilary Benn.
Sam Gimier, Tory MP, and then there was the editor of The Independent, and there was Greg Mulholland, my local MP, and Natalie Green, the leader of the Green Party. I think everyone argued in favour of the question. And I think the point to make was that if you want to change something, you need to vote, and that you can't try and change something through political disengagement and not using the vote you have.
Yeah, that's very, very true. Do you believe that, like, Russell Brand, you know, he tells people not to vote, you know, that is a statement.
It is a statement. You're correct.
What do you think about that?
This is the Paxman interview, when Jeremy Paxman turned around and very sharply said, this is the worst thing you could advise the youth of today to do, is sit at home and feel disengaged. Instead, why not go out and spoil your ballot? And it was a valid point, and for a while I thought about setting up this little agenda called spoilyourballot.org for the general campaign, the general election, just because it seems like the most audible way of logging a protest vote.
You know, as Hilary Benn brought up a point yesterday, said, look, you know, gay people used to be in prison for kind of being homosexual. What changed that? People voted and the laws changed. You know, I think people underestimate, you know, that I think they take for granted the kind of the democracy we live in. Also, you know, like, people have died and, you know, fought for a democracy. If you look at also the suffragettes, look at, like, kind of, women didn't get the full vote until 1928. Mm. So to kind of give it up and take a kind of blasé attitude towards voting is, I think the completely wrong approach.
I agree. Like, just because your party doesn't win doesn't mean that your vote didn't count. And, exactly what you said, we fought for this.
But also the idea that kind of, the way people engage with politics has changed and evolved. I don't think the only way to kind of get involved with politics is necessarily to vote. If you look at kind of like the student fees, there was massive protests.
Well, that's the thing. That's the thing. Our protest now, that the true reflection of sort of politics is this, our voice. You know, voting and the party system, you know, people are disillusioned with it. As we spoke about before with Prime Minister's questions, you know, it's sort of a certain class, like, you know, Bullingdon Club, whatever, like, you know, we could use superlatives for hours, I'm sure. But protesting, it's from the heart, anyone can do it, it's simple, and it's more active. It's people going out there to do it, taking the step. Yeah. Now, you know, there's been legislation passed that sort of might stop allowing people to protest, you know, using water guns against the people. Surely this is reducing democracy.
Yeah. How many people as well do you know on Facebook who happily share a link or kind of write an angry status? Mm. So it's a kind of paradox in a way that they wouldn't vote. The number of people who vote in like are within our age group is appalling. But I think it just ties in with the idea that the way we engage with politics just happens in a different way. I don't believe the idea that kind of young people are completely disengaged. I think they are engaged, but it's kind of evolved, you know, in a world where we're all on Facebook and Twitter. It's kind of become expressed in a different way.
Maybe we're looking for a different medium by which to express ourselves. Maybe that's what we need.
I'd point the finger of blame partially at the first past the post voting system, which actively encourages this idea that votes can be literally wasted. because of the way it's set up and the
but we had a yeah. vote to pass what was it
the alternative vote, and there was no information. There was it was immediately after the Conservative coalition with the Liberal Democrats, and of course the Conservatives used everything in their power to ensure that the only thing people knew about it was that it was a change, and there was an underwhelming turnout, and there was just a complete lack of information, and so it failed quite convincingly. And there are very few, if we're talking about democratic principles, there are very few reasons why that referendum should not have passed.
That is true, actually. You know, we could look back on that moment and really regret it as a collective community.
Yeah, I believe so, yeah.
Yeah.
I think so.
So it seems like, you know, young people are involved in politics, but in a sense it's not party politics. It's more grassroots, maybe, or grounded, real issues. And it's up to... You know, there's a gap between parties and the people, and there needs to be a portal, some sort of person or whatever, social media, to get people our age involved in it. And it's ironic that the person at the moment that's doing that is Russell Brand, whose whole existence is against all that.
Yeah, I mean, as it was kind of highlighted yesterday, I think Russell Brand, what he's so good at is kind of parodying that what we've made fun of all this politics shit about the kind of the elitist nature of Westminster politics. Mm. Where he kind of fails is kind of the alternative he brings, which is nothing. Mm. But I think in itself,
it's literally nothing.
Yeah, he's got almost 2 million views on every YouTube video he has. Mm. You know, so people want to listen to this stuff. Mm. So I think kind of if politicians kind of took some of that and said, right, kind of try and engage through something like YouTube. I think that would be a lot better.
It would seem so forced, though, to see David Cameron like, "Hi, I'm David Cameron, and I'm on YouTube now. I'm down with the kids. I sit on the chair backwards."
Yeah.
Anyway, we're just about to finish the show. So basically, we have this like weekly thing where we do like a moment with Alan. I'm sure Vic remembers because he was a bit of a regular on last time.
I do remember.
So you remember it was Alan Watts?
Yeah.
So this time, we're going to have a moment with Alan, but it can be any Alan. So I've chosen Alan Shearer. He says something that sort of rounds politics quite well. He said... I think this might have been Match of the Day 2 seasons ago. Sometimes going in for a hard tackle generates a louder cheer than a great pass. Do we need to get rid of strategic politics? Do we need someone to go in and shake up our political system and go in for the hard tackle? Do we need an Ali G? That's what I'm asking. Anyway, it was a quick show, but it was wonderful. I'd like to thank you guys for coming on. Nick, cheers. Vic.
Cheers, fam.
And Archie, thanks for coming on. Join us next week on Dan and Pals for the second episode of this wonderful semester. Thank you very much.
This is Leeds Student Radio.
Sound
students
in Leeds.
Delivering over 100 hours of broadcasting made by 300 students every week.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello and welcome.
And
it's all about you.
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 You. You.
Top tips from the Student Advice Centre.
Join a club or society as it's a great way to meet loads of like-minded people and get involved.
There are loads of part-time job opportunities in Leeds that'll keep any financial worries at bay, or pop into your Student Advice Centre to help with budgeting and money management.
Staying safe in a new city can be stressful for some. Here at the Student Advice Centre, you can chat to us about anything in confidence, whether it's academic or personal.
And remember, the Student Advice Centre is here for you.
Have you thought about where you want to live next year?
No, I literally can't be bothered to start looking.
But you've got to start thinking about these things.
I've got so much work on at the moment. I'm really stressed with that essay deadline, and I don't have time to think about finding a new house.
Sound familiar? If you're worried about house hunting this winter, then Spencer Properties can help.
With a wide selection of properties in Hyde Park, Headingley, Burley, Woodhouse and the city centre, Spencer Properties offers a friendly and stress-free service.
Head to our offices at Hyde Park Corner or visit spencer-properties.co.uk for friendly advice on renting your first home.
Spencer Properties, come find your new home.
Hi, this is Danny Howard and you're listening to Leeds Student Radio.
Are you 16 to 24? A job seeker, student or graduate? Want to explore your future opportunities? Want to speak to professional career advisors?
If the answer's yes, then come along to Stemtech Live Careers and Job Expo at New Dock Hall, Armoury Square on Friday, February the 13th.
Join colleges, universities, apprenticeship and recruitment providers and employers. Plus, get advice on grants, bursaries and support on becoming self-employed.
No matter what your ability level or exam results, you'll be able to find something to suit you. So come along with your friends and family and remember that this event is totally free to attend.
Happy birthday, Gollum. Celebrating it here at Fab Cafe was a great idea.
Yes, Samwise. I'm really enjoying the eclectic range of music and the sci-fi themed food. Look, Lord of the Onion Rings.
Yes, yes, the gift says give some to us now.
But Gandalf hasn't arrived yet.
I say, it's not like Gandalf to be late.
A wizard is never late, nor is he early. He arrives precisely when he means to. And look, Gollum, I bought you a double scotch.
Pippin, they do doubles here.
Yes, Merry, and they're only $2.50.
I'm getting one.
Stupid fat hobbit! Doesn't he know Fab Cafe is open every day of the week?
Live from Leeds University Union.
At the heart of your student life.
The things that matter to you.
To you.
To you. To you.
Your